Hello and welcome to another episode of the Reinvent Health podcast. Here we get to chat to some of the world's most interesting and influential people about everything to do with physical, mental, and spiritual well-being. If you want to make healthy changes and live a better life, you are in the right place. Please don't forget to rate, leave a review, and share with everyone who wants to live their best life. And now your host, Nikki Robertson.
And welcome back to the Reinvent podcast. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Cool. Thanks again for having me.
So today we're going to chat about health span versus lifespan. And, you know, when I see people in my practice that come to me because they want to feel better, they've got diabetes or they've got any number of issues. Our aim is to help people have a better quality of life for as long as possible. And, you know, in today's day and age, everyone's trying to live longer, so live into your 90s, but very little thought has been given to how well do we age into our 90s. So we can age purely as a result of pharmaceuticals keeping us alive, but that's not exactly a quality of life that we're going for. So you can be 99 years old, but you can be completely dependent on people to keep you going. Or you could be a 95-year-old who's still doing their garden and going for walks and cooking for themselves. So from your point of view in the longevity or health space that you navigate within your company and the way you live, what is the difference between health span and lifespan for our listeners, and where do you see this going in the next couple of years?
Sure. I think that's a super good point. So a lot of guys see longevity as living as long as possible, or looking good as long as possible.
Good.
And
yeah.
I think that's probably something else that we can discuss, is the difference between anti-aging from a aesthetic perspective or phenotype perspective, and then from a cellular or health or well-being perspective. Mm. But separating longevity and anti-aging into health span and lifespan is a really good way to do it, because health span refers to how healthy you are, living for function. So exactly that, being able to be functional by the time that you're 90 or 100 or 80 or whatever that kind of like end of life segment is like, whereas lifespan is living for as long as possible.
Right.
And I think it comes down to goals. So people have different goals. Some guys want to live for as long as possible, and that might be a little short-sighted at this point in time, because you are healthy, you can move around, you can, you know, speak, function normally. And the idea of living to 180 sounds absolutely amazing, because you'd get to see all the crazy, wacky stuff that might happen and how the world can change and your kids grow up and whatever it may be. But losing that health or losing that wellness or losing that function is probably something that isn't necessarily considered and probably should be a little more of a priority over, you know.
Yeah. So there's so many things we can go into here. So let's start with genetics. So many people believe that we are victims, because there's no other word to say it, of the genetics we've inherited from our parents. And this is simply not true, because we know that we can turn on and off genetic expression based on how we treat our bodies and what goes on in the environment. So the environment can dictate, and our habits dictate, and our choices dictate our genetics, what part of the genome switches on and off. And what I mean by that is, if you have a family history of heart disease or diabetes, doesn't mean you're going to get heart disease and diabetes. If you follow the trend of how your family lived their lives, perhaps you will. So if you eat what your parents ate, or you didn't exercise and you had a specifically like a sedentary lifestyle, chances are you will follow that path. But it is our choice how, you know, whether or not we go down those pathways. So it is entirely up to us how we age. And I mean, you mentioned earlier, you know, those genetic predispositions. So we've got enzymes that switch on and off our genes. How, in your experience, and knowing what you know about the science behind supplementation, how does our environment and what we consume influence those factors?
Yeah. So I think a lot of people had that same misconception where these are the genes that you've been dealt and this is what is going to happen and this is what's kind of like predefined and written in sand for you. But funnily enough, there was actually a study done. Who did the study? I don't recall. And what the exact percentage of, I don't recall either, but it was something along the lines of your genetics, your genes that you are given only account for about 20% of the aging implications for you. The other 80% or odd percent is down to your environment, it's down to your lifestyle, it's down to your diet, it's down to your practices, down to your routines. And it's exactly that. So majority of what we do, what we eat, how we play, influences the way that we age. And that 20% is insignificant in the grand scheme of things. And yes, maybe you are still predisposed to certain things. And yes, there still is a chance statistically for that to occur. But with current medicine and technology and science and everything like that, we are able to assist and prevent and, you know, treat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, I think it's also really important to draw a distinction between pharmaceutical intervention and what nootropics, for example, or supplementation or clever supplementation, because that pool can get really, really blurred. I see a lot of people come to me and say, oh, they don't want any medication, they don't want any supplements. And there's a distinct difference between being dependent on pharmaceuticals. So there's certain pharmaceuticals that are incredibly important and life-preserving. And we've learned that we mentioned before we started recording, the diabetes drug metformin has been shown to increase your longevity for people who are diabetic substantially. But this is a drug that's been around for almost half a century. So let's define for people who are interested in living better longer, the difference between being dependent on pharmaceuticals versus being very strategic about supplementation with products that you won't necessarily find in food, so your mushrooms and your other products that enhance brain health, for example, and telomere length, and you know, all of these. I mean, you've got a range of products that are specifically geared to living well for longer. How do those work?
Yeah, so I think the key difference or the key separator here is the difference between treatment and prevention.
Yeah.
So when you're dependent on something and you're looking at particularly like pharmaceuticals, like treating yourself with insulin, you're dependent on that. You're right. Treating something. It's already occurred. You cannot live without that pharmaceutical treatment, or at least we don't think you can at this point. And then you get prevention. And prevention is generally the better approach. So you can use strategically key supplements and minerals and products to enhance your health, to optimize your well-being, to improve the way that you age. And that's the key difference between being dependent on something and using something strategically for improving your health.
Mm-hmm.
And we've got our second biggest kind of range or of interest on in our market is longevity and anti-aging.
Mm.
And we've got a ton of really, really cool products in that space. And funny enough that you mentioned metformin, which I mentioned to you stat just now, and I'm gonna mention it again. There's actually a study that was done to show that people with type 2 diabetes that take metformin seem to live longer than people who don't take metformin but live a healthy life, which is crazy. So you've got someone with a life-threatening disease or disorder or illness, whatever you want to put it, that is taking a drug for diabetes or insulin that causes indirectly this anti-aging effect that allows them to live longer even with that illness or that disease. And unfortunately, metformin is it's scheduled. You need a script to go get it, or you obviously need to be sick or ill. But there are alternatives, plant extracts like berberine, which is something that we have available. Punting my products, obviously. But one of the downsides of something like berberine is the bioavailability. It goes into the gut, and via pH and enzymes and everything, it's degraded quite rapidly. But then you get something like dihydroberberine, which is made by a company called NNB, or Sean Wells ingredient company. And that is, I think, 6 or 7 times more bioavailable than standard berberine.
Mm-hmm.
So once again, you've got something that and this goes back to prevention and treatment. You're taking metformin as a treatment. You can take something like dihydroberberine in prevention, and not necessarily just prevention from type 2 diabetes, but for healthy aging. It's right. got an array of different benefits, and that comes down to that, what can you do strategically to enhance the way that you age or the way that you live?
Mm. So underpinning aging is inflammation. And I think we mentioned this in the last episode, was underpinning all disease and underpinning all aging is a state of inflammation. And inflammation is when we, the most simple way of explaining inflammation is the mosquito bite. You know, that's inflammation. You can see something bites your skin, you see the redness, you see the heat, you feel the discomfort, but you can take action to mitigate that. But that inflammatory response is your body's way of dealing with a problem. Now, when we have systemic inflammation, which is inflammation we can't see, and also particularly inflammation in the brain, which is what underpins dementia and Alzheimer's, we can't see it and can't feel it. We feel discomfort, but very often in this day and age, we tend to normalize this discomfort because it creeps up so slowly and so gradually that we almost assume it's normal.
And yeah, this is
becomes your normal baseline state. And products like berberine are, and even turmeric, and there are so many that are, those are anti-inflammatory products. So they bring down systemic inflammation in the body so that the body is more adaptive to healing. And when we have a disease like diabetes, what too much glucose in the system does is it creates an inflamed state. So it literally breaks down our collagen synthesis. It breaks down organs and tissues. This is why we have, it inhibits our ability, our vascularity. So the blood vessel, or the way that the blood flows into our extremities. So, it impedes heart health. It leads to heart disease. It impedes almost every system in the body because it's basically creating a state of inflammation. So, like you said, if we come at or arrive at the idea of living a long, healthy life from the mindset of reducing inflammation, and there's many things you can do to do that. I mean, omega-3s is one of the products as well that brings down the heat in the body. It brings down the inflammatory response in the body. And view anti-aging, longevity and health span from a point of view of bringing down inflammation by taking action rather than having to respond to something at a later stage. But the problem is, as human beings, we don't do anything until there's a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think that's the mind shift we need to start establishing early on.
Yeah, it's the same thing. So as someone who's quite active, stretching is supposed to be something that you incorporate into your day-to-day. And you know it's important. You know you need to do it.
Uh-huh.
You know the benefits of it.
You don't do it.
You don't do it. And then something happens. You get injured. You get a niggle. Something goes wrong. Mm. And then you think to yourself, oh, shit, I need to stretch. Or I need to do this prehab work. Mm. And prehab is the key here, not rehab.
Yes.
And you only realize that you need to do it once, it's too late. And it's the same thing with aging. It's the same thing with illness and disease. We only realize it once it's too late. And going back to inflammation is this emergency response in the body.
Mm.
It's, oh shit, something's gone wrong.
Yeah.
This is our reaction. This is the innate response of the body to solve that problem. And as smart as the body is, it's also stupid at the same time in terms of how it responds.
Mm.
And the reason why inflammation is common amongst all these different areas of, you know, diabetes or Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever it is because it's that last kind of like primal response of the body to an emergency situation. But the cause of what results in that is different in each case.
Mm.
So it's a lot of people just talk about treating inflammation, but how do you treat inflammation?
Exactly.
Because there's so many different causes of it. It can be from bad foods. It can be from exposure to toxins.
Lack of sleep.
Lack of sleep, whatever it is. It's the diet, it's the lifestyle, it's the routine, it's what you do, it's how you do it. That causes inflammation.
Stress, big one.
Yeah. So how do you tackle all these different things when something as simple as inflammation is so complex in its cause, in its root?
So because it's complex, you can't just go and take a capsule of berberine and hope it's going to fix you.
Exactly.
Yeah. So again, I think we've got to really define for anyone who really wants to live well, is that, you know, or as you spoke about before, there's these pillars and these foundations that we've got to establish before you start looking for the pull that's going, the magic bullet. So those foundations are eating well and, you know, drinking your water, getting movement, getting the sleep in, managing your stress, which is complex. I mean, we live really busy lives. People feel that, you know, I don't have time to sleep. I don't have time to manage my stress. Who's got time to exercise? But if it's important enough for you, you make the time, you find the time.
Exactly.
Okay. So from your perspective as a healthy human and someone who is entrenched in the health space, where would you start if you somebody had to come to you and say, I'm overwrought, I'm inflamed, I'm afraid of getting diabetes? Where would you start them? And yeah, what would your best advice be for somebody who's, say, 45 years old and really on the brink of crashing?
So that's a really common thing. Someone with a lot of people always come to you and they're like, this is my problem, how do I solve it? And then I always like to look at the basics, the foundation. What are the simple things that you're doing completely wrong?
Mm.
So it's exactly that. How's your sleep? How's your diet? What is your exercise like? You know, do you socialize or connect? You need these foundational pillars to be right before you can become more specific in terms of what you're doing. And unfortunately for everybody listening, it's not just a magic pill that you can take, because you are eating shit every single day. You are sleeping like shit every single night. You are stressing yourself out. You are not socializing. You have no community. You have no connection.
Yes.
No pill, no supplement, no product. Nothing is going to fix and resolve that. Supplements are there to supplement by definition. So I know we did the podcast on sleep previously. Mm-hmm. That is probably going to be the number one place to start. Mm-hmm. It always is. If you're feeling like crap during the day, it's from last night's sleep.
Mm.
If you feel like you need to eat a ton of shit, it's because you slept really badly. And sleep is the core foundation for everything that we do. I mean, the way that evolution has gone, you would think that we would be able to sleep less by evolution.
Yes.
Hunters and gatherers, we had to go on these hunts. We had to stay up. We had to survive. We had to watch out for predators. And sleeping, well, that sleeping state is the most vulnerable, dangerous state you can be in.
Mm-hmm.
Yet we still have to sleep. Mm-hmm. So it's just evidence that it is that important.
Mm-hmm.
Then number two would be how we fuel ourselves. And I use the word fuel over diet because I think diets are short-sighted. I don't like the idea of diets. This is the specific diet that you should eat, and these are the food that you need to eat, and these diets are good and these diets are bad. It's, to me, it's a load of crap.
It is, yeah.
I like the idea of fueling for purpose. So if you are trying to, and obviously on the relevant topic of anti-aging and longevity, if you are trying to fuel for longevity and anti-aging, you need to follow a specific type of diet.
Mm.
If you are trying to fuel yourself for maximal physical performance, you need to fuel yourself in a specific way.
Mm.
If you need to fuel yourself for XYZ, there's a way to fuel it. The idea is that you need to eat and supplement with purpose.
Mm.
And those will probably be two of the key things to address first: how you're sleeping and how you're eating.
Mm.
And from there, then you can start getting more creative with how you approach it. But
yeah,
eating and sleeping are going to be the two most important.
So to go back to sleeping quickly, because I know we've spoken about sleeping a lot, and the theory is amongst doctors as well, is that as we age, we need to sleep less. And I can't tell you how I disagree with that, because yes, if you are aging and you want to die in your early 80s, sleep less. Maybe that is a natural trajectory. But if you want to live into your 90s and you want to extend your health span, you've got to sleep like somebody in their middle age. So you need your 8 to 9 hours of sleep a night. So just going, well, I'm in my 70s, my doctor says I don't need to sleep much, is a surefire way to make sure you don't live very well.
No, certainly. I mean, sleep is the time when we prepare.
Yeah.
It's the time where your body cleanses out the brain. It's the time where your body replenishes. It's a, sleep is the point in time where you are doing all the preventative preparational stuff that assists with living longer. So if you start cutting down sleep, you're going to start aging quicker. And that's why it's probably one of the most important components or aspects of life. And it's probably one of the most, it's going to have the biggest impact on what you do and how you feel.
Yeah. And then from a nutrition point of view, what are the things like that, I mean, that you are aware of that are probably your best insurance policy for aging? So not just aging well, but good skin, good hair, lots of energy. Things like, you know, we've spoken at length about organ meats. What is the benefit of something like good quality meat, good quality organ meat from a nutritional point of view? And this is something that people don't do. And especially in SA, where organ meats are not something we cook on a daily basis. It's not really...
And that's weird because we have an abundance of meat. I mean, we live in like the land of meat.
The land of meat, yeah. Exactly.
I think it's actually pretty simple. Processed foods, sugars... you got to cut it out. Anything that comes pre-packaged and pre-processed is going to be the biggest no-no. Yes. If you eat, I think out of all the diets, the Mediterranean, you mentioned the Mediterranean diet is probably the best. Mm-hmm. Full of healthy fats. It's got a good balance between meats and fruits and vegetables. Mm-hmm. It's quite broad. It's seasonal. Mm-hmm. You've got a good array of different things that you can eat. It's probably going to be really, really good. Also the fish.
Mm-hmm.
But then you mentioned the source, and that's super important. Mm-hmm. If you're eating a lot of fish and you have a lot of fish in your diet, mercury, lead, all these heavy metals, that that's something that's
to consider.
Is concerning. But I think the question you asked was, what is the biggest, like, the word that you use, like safety net or policy that you could have? And it's going to be eating as natural. I don't want to say the word organic because I feel like there's so much health washing around the term organic.
Yeah.
But just going back to the basics, stop with the preserved, processed, sugary foods and try eat old head to tail kind of diet. And incorporating things like organ meats in your diet is going to be super, super important in that. And I'm not the biggest fan of actual organ meats. I don't like the taste of liver and kidney and heart, but it doesn't mean that I don't eat it. So once again, you shift to that supplement side, which is the business that we're in. We have freeze-dried beef liver capsules. And it's a way for me to get organ meats into my diet without having to actively eat organ meats. So call it like a cheat code or whatever it is. But there's ways to do it and incorporate it into your diet without having to actually do it, even if the idea of it creeps you out. And then it comes down to why organ meats are so important. It's the nutrients, it's the vitamins inside of there. We always talk about how humans or men or women are so deficient in vitamin K or vitamin A or vitamin D or, you know,
your
whatever it is. And the reason is because our diet's so shit. And the other reason is, even if your diet is pretty good, is because the source or quality of foods that we're eating is so terrible.
So if you look at a kill, if you go out and, you know, go to a game reserve and you see a lion kill, the first thing those predators are going to eat is the organ meats. They're going to eat the brain. They're going to eat the liver and the heart. And they're going to leave the rump steak and the fillets for the hyenas because there's not much nutrients. I mean, there's protein, but the real magic and the life-sustaining energy, if you want, and the nutrients are sitting in those blood pumping, filtering organs. And yes, if you can get them in a desiccated dried capsule, fantastic. But yeah, that is where, you know, we can go and take a completely factory fabricated multivitamin, which is going to end up, 90% is going to end up in the toilet. Or you can go and eat some chicken livers or in a capsule, and you're going to get 90% of that through your system and doing some good work for you.
Yeah. Simple. Sometimes the simple approach is easiest approach.
It's always my simple approach. Yeah. And then as far as omega-3 fats and those sorts of things are concerned, from a health span point of view, how important are those?
So I think omega-3s are probably like one of the most essential vitamins or minerals or however you want to classify them that you can take. And once again, it comes down to the diet that we eat and how deficient it is in those omegas, essentially. That's why the Mediterranean diet is so good. Yes. Fish, seafood, high in omegas.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we don't eat a lot of that. South Africans, I think, we eat a lot of red meat. Mm. Vegan, vegetarian, you obviously don't get any of that.
Mm.
So having something like omegas is really, really good. And then it's great for brain health. It's great for inflammation. It's great for cognition. It's great for prevention of any sort of like cognitive related disorders.
Mm.
And it's just something that we don't get enough of.
Mm. Mm. So the line between longevity and looking good, the pure aesthetic side of it is quite blurred. So there's a massive market for the sort of aesthetic wanting to look good, not just age well market. And what are your top, obviously, once we've got our foundation right, so you're eating well, you're moving, because moving is really, really good for your brain health, not just your body. And you're drinking water and you're staying away from sugars and processed foods. From a purely aesthetic standpoint, just for, you know, glowing skin, healthy nails, mind you, your livers, your organ meats are probably your first, you know, first go-to when it comes to looking good as well. What are your other sort of products that you would say are something to look into, something to consider?
Yeah, something defining. So you've got the concept of anti-aging or longevity, I think. As I mentioned earlier, it comes down to goals. What are the goals for different people? Is it to look better for longer? Is it to look more youthful? Is it to live longer? Whatever it may be. And there's a lot of overlap between those, because someone that wants to live longer and look better and look more youthful as they age, by default, you probably should age better and be more active and be more functional from a cellular level. But in terms of cosmetic or aesthetic related anti-aging products, collagen is probably the most popular, well-known, well-considered of those.
Mm.
And yes, it promotes skin elasticity and it helps the joints and nails and it'll help you look more youthful.
Mm.
But from a standpoint of supplements that you can use for cosmetic or aesthetic aging, I don't think there's too much that makes a significant difference.
Yeah.
Well, that's at least just my opinion on it. Mm. I think if you focus rather from a cellular aging point of view, if you focus on the idea of just trying to age better, trying to promote the best way that your body can age internally, by default, you will look better. You will be more youthful.
Mm-hmm. What is the mechanism of collagen? How does that absorb and, from a bioavailability point of view, how does it become the thing that helps enhance your skin? What is the trick as compared to, say, any other form of protein? How does it work?
So protein is comprised of a whole bunch of different amino acids. Mm-hmm. You've got your branched chain, you've got your essential, etc. Now, your body digests that protein, it breaks those down into the individual amino acids. Then, depending on demand and function, whatever it is, it's going to use those amino acids in different key areas. That'd be for protein synthesis, skin repair, replacement, cells, etc. So an easy example is the concept of whey protein.
Mm-hmm.
So if you compare whey protein and collagen, they're both protein products, they're both made up of amino acids, they've just got different compositions.
Delivery systems, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You can look at it that way. Mm-hmm. And the one is good for one aspect and the other is good for another. Collagen is not good for building muscle. It's not anabolic. It's missing some of the core amino acids.
Yeah.
And yes, collagen has to be broken up. And then it has to be, those individual amino acids have to be used the same way that when you ingest whey protein. They're broken up. But it's the ratios. It's the amounts of those individual amino acids that you are providing your body to use.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll use whey protein for an anabolic muscle building state because it's comprised of the correct amino acids for muscle building.
Mm.
The same way that collagen is comprised as the correct amino acids for skin repair, skin renewal, joint health.
Right, ligaments, tendons, connective tissue.
Exactly.
Okay.
I like to look at it, you're baking a cake or you're baking different cupcakes and recipes, whatever it is.
Yes.
And we can add in the concept of branched chain amino acids and essential amino acids here.
Yes.
If you want to make a cake and you need egg, flours, and baking tins, you are limited by the amount of ingredients that you can make. So if you put eggs and flour, you have an unlimited amount, but you only have 10 baking tins.
Mm.
You are only going to be making 10 cakes because that baking tin, which could be one of the many amino acids,
mm-hmm.
is going to be the rate limiting factor in that reaction or pathway or recipe.
Mm.
And it's the same way that works with these different protein sources. Mm. And going back to amino acids, branch chain and essential, branch chain amino acids only has the branch chain amino acids. You're missing a whole bunch of them. Whereas essential has all of the essential amino acids that you require.
Mm-hmm.
So supplementing with branch chain amino acids, you're missing a couple of those other amino acids that are vital to the ingredients to baking that cake.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the concept of collagen the difference. And whey protein.
Okay.
And the difference.
So while we're on the topic of protein and muscle, and I think it's really not discussed enough that muscle is the fountain of youth. When we start deteriorating, when we start losing muscle, that's the first sign of aging. When somebody is ill, they lose muscle mass. And as they lose muscle mass, they deteriorate quicker and further, which is why, in fact, whey protein, way back when was found or used as a medical food, specifically to stop people losing muscle while they were bedridden, to keep them alive longer. That's how, whey protein was bought into this market initially. And especially with women, and women are notoriously muscle phobic. We tell a woman they need to put on muscle and they look at you with horror thinking they're going to turn into a bodybuilder. And it takes a lot more than protein to put, to
if
look
like. If only it was that easy,
If only it was that easy. But this is the recipe that creates the organ that keeps you young, because when you have muscle, you metabolize so much more efficiently. You can use the energy from the foods you consume more efficiently, and it goes into muscle mass, not into fat storage. And fat being the most inflammatory compound, or stored body fat being the source of inflammation in our bodies, which is counterintuitive to aging well. So the more body fat we have, the more inflamed we become, the quicker we age. The more muscle we have, it slows down the aging process. So as an athlete yourself, how would you convince a woman of sort of anywhere, it's like a 30-year-old woman wanting to look really well, instead of saying they will look toned, because toned is just a word that body sort of personal trainers use to convince women that they need to pick up weights. How would you convince a woman who wants to look well, wants to look good, wants to look young, that they need to pick up weights and eat protein?
That is a tough one. Maybe just changing the way that you approach it, instead of looking at it from a point of view of putting on muscle. I don't think it's necessarily the idea of putting on muscle prevents aging. I think it's the idea of hormesis, this idea of stress response, this idea of being active. And that process, or that in itself, helps with aging better. It helps keep you healthier.
Yes.
It's... think about back to the basics.
Mm-hmm.
Eat well, sleep well, exercise. Those are like the three things that every single doctor, no matter what the gender's been, no matter what the diet or of the season has been, the three main things that have always been told everybody: eat well, sleep well, and exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So if you look at it from a point of view of just being resilient, just being healthy, and from a point of view of longevity, maybe that's the way to approach it. Instead of saying you need to put on muscle and go to the gym, you need to exercise for longevity. You need to exercise to live longer.
Yes.
That's maybe the way to look at it.
Yeah, it is a much more practical way of explaining these things. So again, as we said before, is people are busy. We believe we don't have time to exercise. We believe we don't have time to prepare meals. I really think that, the best way to get around any of these self-perceived limitations is to pick the easy win, is to figure out, go to bed an hour earlier. Can you do that? Most people can do that. And, just start building small steps. So getting to bed a little earlier, making one better nutrition choice a day, exercising for just a little bit, one extra day a week. If you can't exercise every day, don't. I don't think that's a good idea either, unless you're a triathlete. who trains 7 days a week. But, you know, if twice a week is what your cabana, just already 100% better than where you were.
No.
So breaking things down into small manageable chunks to take you to where you want to be is, I think, the key to get going, getting started. You know, what are your thoughts around that?
No, I definitely agree. I think you put it into a good phrase, small changes, big results.
Mm.
And I think we've also put out a blog post around that. But the idea is that you need to do things incrementally. You need to do things that are actionable, things that are sustainable, things that you will implement.
Mm.
And, you know, being consistent is going to be the key here. You can do something for 2 weeks and it's probably going to be a waste of time if you don't continue it after that. So making small, implementable, actionable, and things that you will keep consistent,
sure,
are going to be the best way to approach this. Anyone that says they don't have time to exercise either needs to fix their life or stop lying to themselves, because you don't need exercise for an hour and a half. That can be 20 minutes.
Exactly.
And if you can't fit in 20 minutes, we need to relook at your day. Yeah. And it's not even just about going to the gym for 20 minutes. It can be standing while you're working. You can implement all these different things into your day. So I think going back to the key here is to find stuff that you can implement into your day, stuff that is personalized to you, and finding things that are simple and easy to action.
Mm.
And you can look at the three different areas: exercise, diet, and sleep.
Mm.
So you're currently sleeping for 4 hours a night. Mm. You are semi-operating, and you want to improve your sleep. Let's be honest, jumping from 4 hours to 8 hours is probably going to be unsustainable unless you're really doing something wrong and there's like a really blazing clear fix. It's not going to work. So let's find a way. Let's sleep for an extra hour a night.
Mm.
You know, I'm going to cut out an hour of TV time in the evening or whatever it is, and you're going to add on an hour of sleep. That's a small change that's going to have a big impact.
Yeah.
Now we look at our diet. Okay, so we are finding that every single morning we're eating a lot of processed foods. We're drinking a lot of sugary drinks. On the way to work every morning, I stop past McDonald's and I pick up a breakfast combo or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Cut that out of your day. Or it is, you know, I eat all these processed sugary foods because I don't have time in the day to sit and make lunch, or I don't have time in the mornings to prep my food. On a Sunday, do some meal prep. Prep yourself healthy food throughout the week, or find yourself healthy, sustainable snacks. And it doesn't have to be expensive or outrageous or whatever it is, but once again,
hard-boiled eggs.
There you go.
Best go-to.
I prep these like slaw salads at the moment.
Yeah. It's
tuna, slaw,
so easy.
Cucumber, tomatoes, avocados, a bit of olive oil, balsamic vinegar. Like, it's healthy, it's filling, it's light. So finding, once again, a small thing in your diet that you can change. You don't have to fix your entire diet. We're not saying change up everything that you're eating, shift the entire idea of how you eat.
Yeah.
Just something small. Cut out the sugary drinks. Cut out the processed food in small increments.
Mm-hmm.
And once you've mastered that, adjust, improve, perfect. And then you come down to exercise. Okay, maybe realistically you are unable to go, that you don't want to pay for a gym contract. Let's use that as the example, because that's probably an easy one for people to use. Stand while you work. Standing. So there was actually another study that sitting throughout a day, if you sit for 6 to 8 hours of the day at your desk, negates 45 minutes or an hour of exercise you do.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do your 45 minutes of exercise, and probably not in its entirety, but you are pretty much going backwards and canceling out by sitting for 8 hours at your desk.
Mm-hmm.
Stand, move around.
Mm-hmm. 10 steps.
Yeah, exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Simple things like that. Mm-hmm. So you can say, while I eat lunch in the afternoon, I am going to stand and eat lunch.
Mm.
So I'll take my lunch standing.
Mm. Mm.
You do not need to be sitting when you've been sitting at a computer for the past
three hours,
and you're going to be sitting at the computer for the next 3 hours.
Yeah.
So there's a small change that you can do. And the key is you've analyzed your day. This is specific to you. This is where you've identified areas that you can change. And by default, they're going to be sustainable, they're going to be practical, because you've identified those areas and you're going to change those areas. And then hopefully you see some sort of benefit in it and you can take step two and you can reanalyze what you're doing. And if you're not able to do that yourself, you've got people that you can consult like yourself, which and then do that work for you and keep you accountable. But consistency is going to be key, and finding things that are practical are going to be
consistency is everything.
Exactly.
So if we have this foundation now in place, from your perspective completely, what are the top three longevity supplements that you are excited about at the moment that somebody could go on to your online store and go, I've got everything else right, let's put this on top?
Yeah, so it's kind of weird for myself being so young to be so excited about anti-aging, longevity, but it's just a really, really exciting space. It's a really interesting space. The research that's coming out, the studies, the theories and hypotheses that are coming out are really, really interesting. And obviously anyone that is interested in finding more out about that, it's not gonna be from myself, it's gonna be from someone that is an expert in the field, like David Sinclair, his book Lifespan. Yes. He has a really cool podcast series with Dr. Huberman, a couple episodes about how we age and how to age well and what causes aging and the supplements. Yes. And everything that we've kind of talked about this with a lot more science and backing behind it. But I think three of the most interesting products at the moment would be a product called Spermidine, and we'll go into them now. NMN. Mm-hmm. And another one is probably going to be, it would have to be berberine or the hydroberberine or metformin, AKA.
Yeah.
And maybe just a step back on how aging works, and there's more information on this in the Lifespan book by David Sinclair, but there's three main genes that we've kind of identified as the longevity genes, and there's tons of longevity genes, but these are the three main ones. And it's mTOR, which is you want less of, so it's upregulated, where you eat stuff like meat or proteins typically. You've got AMPK, which is related to mitochondrial function. You want more of that. That's increased when you exercise or you fast.
Yeah.
And then you've got sirtuins. And these three genes are the key areas of focus for most longevity practices, most anti-aging supplements. So when you look at the first one that I mentioned, spermidine, funny name, funny origin. It was actually originally extracted from bull semen. Actual sperm, and that's where spermidine comes from. Now the product that we use is from Spermidine Life, which is the world's leading researcher in spermidine. They have like the world's leading product. It's patented, it's trademarked, comes from one special location. It's the best spermidine on the market that you can get. It's extracted from germ wheat.
Okay.
Vegan, vegetarian friendly for those that have a sense of humor. And that works on the sirtuin pathway, it works on the AMPK pathway, and it simulates fasting, so it causes autophagy.
Oh,
so the same way fast without fasting. So fasting, and the reason why everyone promotes fasting is because it creates this stress response in the body. Your body goes into survival mode and it starts cleaning out cells, autophagy, like programs cell death in a sense. Spermidine simulates that. It brings mTOR down, it increases AMPK, it works on the sirtuin pathways, it simulates fasting, it causes cell renewal. So super interesting in how it works. So you can fast enough fasting. Then you've got NMN, which is something that David Sinclair talks about quite a lot. It is probably the hottest longevity anti-aging product on the market at the moment, and also probably going to be the one that you've got to be the most careful of, because everyone is talking about it, everyone wants to buy it, and all the companies are selling it. Let's be honest, the supplement industry is like the wild fucking west. Anybody can make anything.
Yes.
And you've got all these guys making NMN and selling it. And there was a study, well, not a study, but someone went and bought a whole bunch of NMN products off Amazon, and they tested it, and majority of them contained no NMN.
Wow.
Or maybe like 20% NMN.
Yeah.
Or whatever it was.
The probiotics.
So the point is, people are knocking, or people are using really, really poor quality versions of it, or whatever it may be. So you, when you're taking something for longevity, something that is promoting cell health, you want to make sure that it's the right thing and that it's really, really good quality. So once again, Sean Wells owns an ingredient company, amazing company. It's solving a lot of these problems with inefficient, ineffective, really just terrible ingredients in the space. They make a product called Bio NMN, highly bioavailable, very pure NMN. And that's the one that we choose to sell and promote. And David Sinclair promotes a stack, which is a combination of NMN, resveratrol, and then TMG. And TMG is essentially acts as a methyl donor, which is key to their process in itself. And then third on the list, we've got berberine. So a lot of people are familiar with metformin for diabetes. And I mentioned that study with people with type 2 diabetes living longer. I mean, if that's not a clear indicator that you are aging better and living longer, taking something that is used for diabetes, then I don't know what is. But the problem is it's scheduled, and then you've got something like dihydroberberine, or once even better, you've got dihydroberberine, which is six times as bioavailable as normal berberine.
Okay.
And that works via the upregulation of AMPK in the body. So similar response to when you exercise, you increase AMPK.
Yes.
It's those would be the three most interesting, most prominent, and in my opinion, some of the best research is coming out of those products at the moment.
Okay, so that's really, really interesting. That's, I think, definitely worth giving a bash.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you so much, Tristan. This has been, as usual, a fascinating discussion. So yeah, we'll put all the links to your online store in the show notes, and also David Sinclair and all those other the book that you mentioned, so people can go and do their own research, do their own homework, and yeah, live longer, live well.
Exactly. Cool. Thank you very much.
Thank you once again for joining me for another episode of the Reinvent Health Podcast. As usual, all of my guests' details can be found in the show notes page on Apple Podcast, Anchor, or wherever else you listen to your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate on Apple and leave a review.